Finney Smith to inbound. Back to Doncic. Doncic pulls up. Three-pointer. Bang! Bang! It's good! Doncic wins the game at the buzzer!
It has been a long time since we've heard Mike Breen sound like that. And man, did it feel good. It came courtesy of one Luka Doncic, the 21-year-old Dallas Mavericks prodigy, who also just happened to have a 43-point triple-double while playing on an injured ankle. Today, ESPN's Kevin Arnovitz joins us to discuss whether we're witnessing the birth of the league's next superstar. And we also break down a suddenly wild Rockets-Thunder series and the infuriating greatness of one Chris Paul. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Monday, August 24th. This is ESPN Daily. Kevin Arnovitz, I have demanded that you return to your microphone. We had taped the show. We had it signed, sealed, and delivered. And then we both went to our televisions and watched Luka Doncic, I think, become a basketball immortal. What did we just see?
Yeah, and it's very early for that, but we just saw a player with the kind of stage presence. I don't even remember, and I know this is a difficult parallel, like LeBron having his first season or two.
Kevin Arnovitz has covered the NBA for ESPN for more than a decade, and unfortunately, he's been an Atlanta Hawks fan for a lot longer than that.
Everyone in the building knows exactly where the ball is going to go. The defense is set to contain it, and it doesn't matter. And it's by virtue not just of his skill, but of his confidence that he gets it done.
Luka Doncic made Mike Breen go double bang. He made him go double bang with a hurt ankle, with no Kristaps Porzingis, overcoming a 21-point deficit, and he had 43 points, 17 rebounds, 13 assists. And oh yeah, Luka Doncic is only 21 years old.
It was incredible. And this is the kind of stage presence you see once in a generation. 19 seconds left, he actually breaks a tie.
I like this matchup about Luka. Can use that strength. Spins on Jackson. Layup. It's good. 40-point triple-double. And the Mavericks are up two. An electrifying performance from Luka Doncic.
Making it look easy, getting all the way to the rim. He puts the Mavs up two. Marcus Morris hits the corner three. Clippers up one. And then the Clippers execute the first part of their defense on the inbound pass. They give the foul, which forces the Mavericks to do it all over again, except with less time, 3.7 seconds. And then it happens, Pablo. It happens.
Doncic pulls up, three-pointer. Bang! Bang! It's good! Doncic wins the game at the buzzer!
Luka gets exactly what he wants, even though the Clippers are endowed with some of the best wing defenders of their generation, the kind of guys you have to defend players like Luka. Luka is able to manipulate the possession, get Reggie Jackson, and Luka is able to step back and drain a three-pointer, despite the fact that he's not even yet all that proficient a three-point shooter. He's able to drill it, and there it goes.
And that sound you heard as this 21-year-old is drilling a three is also the sound of a 21-year-old drilling holes into a new house on basketball's Mount Olympus. Kevin, I don't want to be a prisoner of the moment here, but this prison is so fun.
It's one of those minimum security prisons, Pablo, where like a golf course and kind of like a spa. It's not just that, you know, he can pick out the defensive matchup he wants as if he's ordering off a menu. And it's not just that he can guide himself like this oversized ninja, then square his body just so that the difficult shot looks just merely simple. There is a stage presence that certain transcendent performers have, really, you know, once in a generation. There was that time 5 years ago, 4 years ago, where Steph had it.
Yes.
You stopped what you were doing because you had no idea when he was going to pull up from 37 feet. Obviously, Kobe had it. in spades, and LeBron certainly has it as well. But you really can count on one hand per generation how many people have it. Listen, a lot's got to go right. You know, you never know what happens in the NBA. It's a really tough Western Conference. We could be having this conversation several years in a row, and yet, you know, Luka can't get past the Lakers or the Warriors or the Clippers, whoever it is. But I think it's fair to say that he will be, you know, carrying the generational torch. And I don't think you have to be a prisoner of the moment to see what's ahead of you.
He gets it done despite everybody knowing what was going to happen. How did the Clippers defense not have Kawhi Leonard and or Paul George draped over Luka Doncic?
Yeah, I mean, there was some screening action on the perimeter, and the Mavericks were, you know, at least ostensibly able to take Leonard out of the play, though he was on Luka Doncic when the ball left the sideline for the inbounds. I give Kawhi Leonard the benefit of the doubt. I mean, he is one of the smartest, certainly the most capable one-on-one defender in the league right now. But again, credit Dallas for executing the kind of play that can take Kawhi Leonard out of, you know, a defensive scheme.
And I guess I have to ask you about Paul George while we're at it, because Paul George, I think, has the capability to be one of the best two-way players in this league. I understand exactly why the Clippers wanted him. I bought into the hype. I believe in all of his talents. But he was 3 of 14 in this game. He was 3 of 16 in the game before, 4 of 17 in the game before that. And the dude ended this game, this loss to the Mavericks, with 9 points, 8 rebounds, 3 assists, 1 for 7 from 3. How worried are you about what Paul George is giving us?
Yeah, I mean, he's going to have to do better than 8 for 36 over 4 games from 3-point land. I mean, his defense has been fine, and he's actually had some of the more effective defensive possessions in this series. But, you know, he almost seemed a little tentative late in the game.
Yes.
As if he was recognizing that, God, I have not shot the ball well. Do I continue to shoot it? And it's worrisome for the Clippers. I don't know that it's anything physical. And, you know, you and I talk about this all the time. There's a lot of randomness to basketball. He might just have a bad 3-game stretch, but they're going to need more from him. I mean, it's clear this prolific offense on the other side is not going away. This is not a 2-7 series in any practical terms. There is no home court advantage. Dare I say, the best player on the floor belongs to the other guys.
I have previously labeled Doncic a sort of mini LeBron, and I think there is reason to object to that label. But when I say that label to you, Kevin Arnovitz, mini LeBron, dissect that for me. Tell me why that doesn't apply. Tell me why I might be a fool for saying that.
I don't think you're a fool, because we were able to marvel at LeBron long before he won anything. I mean, let's not forget, he didn't win his first title till 2012. I think we're able to marvel at transcendent talent on the upside. Youth is intoxicating. And when you see talent that young, that advanced, I mean, you can celebrate it, whether or not he's won anything.
So speaking of intoxication, you're a Hawks fan. 2018 NBA draft. Luka Doncic is selected 3rd overall by your Atlanta Hawks. Do you ever think about that moment, Kevin Arnovitz?
When you're the fan of a downtrodden franchise, you imagine a day when in the lottery, because it's always the lottery, that's where downtrodden franchises reside, in your lap will land a transcendent talent with charisma and complete confidence and a showman, but one who has basketball intelligence and athleticism, somebody like Luka Doncic. And by the draft, almost just haunting me is, you know, selected 3rd by Atlanta Hawks. The Hawks had an opportunity to trade that pick for Trae Young and essentially another pick the following year. They took that opportunity, and I will be heartsick for a long time.
It sounds like while I am checking into the minimum security prison that is Luka Doncic and his moment, you are trapped in a prison of a different kind.
I will come over to your minimum security prison. We can like play golf or go to the spa or whatever other amenities they have.
All right, coming up, let's talk about the other guy who hit a huge shot this weekend. Your old friend, Chris Paul.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Chris Paul! Butter! Chris Paul!
Did he just blow a kiss at the camera?
He did! An 11-0 run by the Thunder in overtime, and Chris Paul, the catalyst.
So, Kevin, on Saturday, Chris Paul did it again. There were double-digit losses in games 1 and 2, but Paul kept the Thunder alive against the Houston Rockets and was seemingly everywhere in this overtime win that was an insane roller coaster. And along the way, he also just happened to hit someone in what seemed to be the urinary tract.
Turns, faces the rim, step back, and a foul. Paul pushed off McLemore. And I think he got McLemore where only Eagles dare.
He elbowed Ben McLemore in the crotch area. And McLemore now joins an illustrious group of victims of Chris Paul that includes Kevin Durant, Chris Kaman, Rudy Gobert, sort of. And my favorite, Julius Hodge of the North Carolina State Wolfpack back in his ACC days, for which Chris Paul got a 1-game suspension.
Doris Burke shouted out Julius Hodge, not by name, but by description.
I saw him do that once in an ACC tournament, and he got ejected for it.
And I just wonder, if you're Julius Hodge, and your phone just starts buzzing, do you just automatically assume that Chris Paul hit someone else in the groin?
Yes, and actually, I think Chris took a shot a couple of years ago, and Julius Hodge did take to Twitter, if I'm correct.
All right, so groin shots aside, the real reason, Kevin, I wanted to talk to you about Chris Paul is because you covered him extensively during his time with the Clippers. So how do you square this dynamic of a guy who is one of the greatest point guards of his era, but is also this character who seems to keep winding up in these less than dignified situations?
Right. I don't want to bury the lead here. There's a reason one of his nicknames in the basketball orbit is Point God. In an era where point guards tend to be scorers first and, frankly, scorers second, he is still one of the great distributors. Blake Griffin, with whom he shared that Lob City team with, one of the ways he characterized it was, like, when Chris is on the floor, everything is organized. Like, he has an ability to manipulate possessions, to get players the ball exactly when and where they want it. It's artistry.
Paul gets to the bucket for the lead. Gilgeous-Alexander got it! And a tremendous, astute find by CP3.
I mean, I said a couple of years ago he might be the best point guard of all time, and I was laughed out of the room given, obviously, all the players who've been there, Magic Johnson notwithstanding. But I just think he is, like, in terms of craftsmanship, and there's no stat for that, I think just when you watch basketball, he is one of the most fascinating players to watch and just manipulating the conditions of the game. He had another classic play last night, Pablo, where in a very vital moment late in the game with Houston inbounding the ball, he gets tied up by intention.
Chris Paul, he's got a hold of him now. They both have a hold. And Chris Paul knows exactly what he's doing.
Like, it is this sort of, you called it a bear hug in our email. You know, he got called for a foul before the play, which gave Houston an additional point when they were already up one, which could have been fatal, except for the fact that Chris Paul was going to rescue him. There are times where he is too clever by half, but he is always clever.
And that cleverness, I mean, when he was tied up with James Harden, it looked like they were about to go on a tandem skydive. Neither of them wanted to let go. No one was sure who was responsible for what. You know Chris Paul, Kevin. You know him well as a reporter and a subject. What is it about him that makes him end up in situations like that over and over again?
he hates to lose. And I know that's a cliche of sport, but he loves litigating too. He is the game's lawyer. I remember after a game once, Chris had exploited, and I forget what the exact play was, but he'd exploited the spirit of the law in order to break the law, right? Like, he knew there was a loophole somewhere in there. And I remember we were talking to him after the fact, and I said, hey, I understand that you were correct, but by the spirit of the law. And he looks at me and says, what is the spirit of the law? Which I just, it's one of my favorite moments, because it just demonstrates that he will nibble on the margins. If there is a loophole to exploit to get an extra possession, to get an extra free throw. I mean, he's one of the masters of drawing contact and a foul when there was no real intention of a shot. I mean, all these sort of just litigious things on the basketball court, which really resourceful players can exploit. He is always going to be at the center of that.
You know, he is such a power broker in this league, Kevin. He is not only an attorney in all the ways you say, he is also a guy who has been the leader of the NBA Players Association. But something that has always struck me about him is that he has never been able to control his destiny like his peers, who are also power brokers. He has been trapped in places and trapped in situations from which he almost escapes and then ends up in situations that are arguably oftentimes worse. I think of the fact that he was about to become a Los Angeles Laker, if not for David Stern ruling due to basketball reasons, that trade was unfair. And now I think about how exactly his time in Houston fell apart and how he winds up here, of course, after his time in Los Angeles with the Clippers fell apart. What is his deal?
It's this interesting contrast, because on one hand, I don't know a guy who makes his teammates better, but Chris Paul can be contentious. He is an irritant, not just to opponents, but at times to his own teammates. And, you know, one Clipper player who played with him in Los Angeles, to kind of capture this, said, he's like the guy when you and your boys are riding around on a Saturday night, he's in the back seat and he is just will not shut up. This is his plan, and this is where we should go first. This is where we should go second, and everybody's just like, shut the F up, except for the fact that if he weren't there, you would end up driving in circles all night. So while you might be irritated with his manner, he's the only guy who's going to get something done. And there it is with a team where he can be an irritant. He can be very difficult to work with in the parlance of just office place labor. But on the other hand, everything is going to be organized. His competence is going to allow the team to flourish possession by possession, even if he drives you crazy doing it.
When you watch him share the floor with James Harden now on opposite sides, does it make you reflect on the reasons why the Houston Rockets experiment with the two of them sharing a backcourt was supposed to work? Or does it now seem so obvious that, in fact, it was never going to?
I mean, I don't think it was obvious, but I do think at the end of the day, their two styles came into conflict. And, you know, I have to say, like, I can't speak for what happened in terms of manner and communication. But I think some of Chris Paul's critiques, and namely they were that, you know, Harden needed to move without the ball, that things would get bogged down, that Harden is such a good isolation player, but that it ends up creating a stagnant offense at times. Like, Chris Paul had a point. My guess is, though, you know, did he make that point as artfully or as diplomatically as it could have been made, or frankly, as sparingly as it could have been made? And so that is an interesting case study. And, you know, Chris Paul might be one of those guys who's always right and never ceases to tell you.
Kevin, thank you so much for making time to fit in with us.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, why the most sought-after personality at ESPN is probably not who you think.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each one-ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are wonderful pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Here's another story I want you to know. After 8 years at ESPN, I've come to appreciate that the only thing more surreal than Matthew Berry's job title, Senior Fantasy Sports Analyst, is the sheer number of massive celebrities who seek his counsel. So today I demanded a public audience with Berry, because I needed to know more about the people demanding a private audience with him. Matthew Berry, welcome to ESPN Daily.
Thank you, Pablo. It's very exciting to hear those words, and I'll tell you why.
Please.
Because I've never heard those words from Mina Kimes. Mina Kimes claims to be my good friend. Mina Kimes texts me for fantasy advice. And yet, despite our friendship, I've never heard those words before. Matthew Berry, welcome to ESPN Daily. So just want you to know, I rank things. That's what I do for a living. ESPN Daily podcast host, it's Pablo Astore. Then it's whoever you fills in for you next time you get sick. And then it's Mina Kimes.
Well, that's precisely what I want to talk to you about, actually. Both the skeletons in Mina Kimes' closet, but also who is bothering you for fantasy advice. Because, Matthew, we are in the middle of ESPN's 5th annual Fantasy Football Marathon, which is an event where I believe you give nonstop fantasy football advice to all of America until your body gives out. That's correct, right?
My mission in life is I can't rest until every man, woman, and child is playing ESPN fantasy football. So I still have a ways to go.
My number one favorite part of your existence is that you are more quietly a private fantasy consigliere to an insane number of famous and powerful people who basically hire you to be their fantasy football SAT tutor.
They don't necessarily hire me. They just sort of reach out through friends. And the fact that I'm talking about it here on this podcast doesn't make it particularly private. But yes, yes, thanks to the popularity of both ESPN and fantasy football over the years, a number of people have reached out, people that I am mutually fans of. And so it's been a fun way for me to get to know some people.
Who is doing this? Who is reaching out to you? Give me some names.
So about 8 years ago, I get a phone call. Matthew, it's Mike. He says, listen, we're all big fans of you. We're having our draft in New York, August 28th. We'd love you to come by and, you know, just sort of hang out. I'm like, listen, Mike, I'm super flattered, but August is like my busiest month. And I just don't do that. I just don't, you know, go to random drafts and hang out. I'm sorry. Can I do a video for your league or something? But I just don't do that. He goes, well, it's for Jay-Z's league.
Huh.
What time do you need me? Should have led with that.
A strong start. A strong first name.
So Chris Paul is in that league. If you are a fan of hip hop music, it's sort of, there's a bunch of legends in that league. The guy that invited me in is a guy named Mike Kaiser, who is the president of Atlantic Records. Steve Stout, who is now doing something called United Masters. Irv Gotti, Murder, Inc., Walking Legend. Rich Kleinman, who is, you know, Kevin Durant's business partner. Yep. He's in that league. I mean, it's legend after legend after legend.
So hold on. When you get called in to do this sort of pro bono advising, do people in the league like get mad at you because you've shown up and here you are, like probably, I assume, favoring Jay-Z because that's the law of any ecosystem that Jay-Z exists in?
Well, it's so funny you bring that up because the very first time I walk in, I'm a surprise for Jay. So I just sort of walk in. People are like clapping and everything like that. And and Jay says, come on over here. All of a sudden, Irv stands up and is like, what? Hell no. You don't bring Jordan to a pickup game. You don't bring Jordan to a pickup game. And Jay's like, no, Barry, shut up, Irv. Barry, get over here. And Irv's like, hell no, Barry. Don't you take one step over there. I'm going to kick your butt. Now, I don't realize at the time that the Irv that is screaming is Irv Gotti. Again, Murder, Inc., right? I mean, like...
It's in the name.
Right? And so... I just think it's some loud guy named Irv. I know the name, but I didn't put the name with a face. I just didn't recognize him in the moment. So they're jawing back and forth, and everyone's cheering, and I'm just standing, like, in the middle of this room. And eventually, like, I get up the nerve after they're going back and forth a while. I'm like, yeah, shut up, Irv. And the room goes silent. I mean, like, you could hear a pin drop. And I'm like, oh, God, what have I done? So there's like this, you know, it's probably like 30 seconds, you know, whatever, even like 15 seconds, but it felt like an eternity. And then Irv just kind of goes, all right, Barry, you all right, you all right, you can stay. And so like but like there was a moment there, Pablo, where I was just like, oh God, what have I done?
Who else can you entice the listener with from your journeys throughout the Hollywood industrial complex?
We do a podcast, Celebrity League, on ESPN for our Fantasy Focus 06010 podcast. If you're listening to the podcast, you can get the Fantasy Focus with me, Field Yates, and Stefania Bell. I'll get a plug in there. I'm a company man. I don't give advice to all of them, but I will just say these are people that I've played fantasy with. John Legend, Zac Efron, both very good fantasy players, by the way. Kevin Durant's been in the league for a few years. Dale Jr., Jim Parsons, Big Bang Theory, of course.
Yes.
Oh, and then I'm also, here's another thing. This is a cool one. We did a thing on ESPN called the Agbo Superhero League. Joe Russo, director of the Avengers, came up with this idea and, you know, put up $100,000 for charity. Basically, the rule was that you had to have appeared in a superhero movie to be in the league. And because Joe and I both had cameos in Avengers Endgame, we were able to sort of sneak under the wire. That's why we made it. You have to just have been in the movie. You didn't have to play a superhero. But everyone else in the league, other than Joe and I, is an actual superhero. And so you've got Robert Downey Jr. and all the Chrises. You've got Chris Pratt, Chris Hemsworth, Chris Evans. You got Thor. You got Star-Lord. You got Captain America. You got Iron Man, obviously. You got Tom Holland, who's Spider-Man. You got Ryan Reynolds, who's Deadpool. Last year, we had Michael B. Jordan, who played Killmonger in Black Panther. We had Anthony Mackie, who plays Falcon. Elizabeth Olsen, of course, Scarlet Witch.
God.
Karen Gillan, who is Nebula. She was in the league. Paul Rudd, who's Ant-Man. He's a great player. Paul Rudd's a fantastic fantasy player.
I mean, you just filled up a building the size of San Diego Comic-Con with all of the names that you just dropped all over this podcast.
Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous.
Matthew, let's wrap up this name drop extravaganza just by reflecting on how you are living like a make-a-wish life. I don't think anybody
unbelievable
would have imagined this when they got into the job of fantasy football, but do you ever think about how far in the not just celebrity hierarchy you've climbed, but just like what your actual life is like?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to actually be a celebrity to be in the celebrity hierarchy. I don't think
you're clinging to the ladder. I mean, you're not necessarily on the ladder, but you're clinging to it on the side and people are glad to have you there like a barnacle on a whale. Absolutely.
All right. I will accept barnacle. I will accept a barnacle on the ladder of show business. You know, listen, I think I'm well known to a certain group of people, right? Which is people that play fantasy football. But it's all pinch me stuff. I mean, like, in what universe should I ever know Jay-Z and have his cell phone number? Like, no universe, right? That shouldn't happen. And yet I do, right? You know, I mean, like, and I don't want to, like, I'm not trying to, you know, brag or anything like that, because I don't want to sit here and say, like, that we're friends or that, like, I hang out at his crib all the time. I don't. But, you know, my point is like, you know, that's ridiculous. I had a bit part in Avengers Endgame, which came about thanks to fantasy football. Like, the idea that me, a non-actor, Pablo, Avengers Endgame is the highest grossing movie of all time worldwide. And on a per movie basis, I am the highest grossing actor of all time.
What's the fantasy equivalent of that, Matthew? Who is the equivalent of that statistic in fantasy football, in history?
Maybe Jonas Gray.
Ooh,
remember Jonas Gray that basically had one game? He had that 4-touchdown game.
The Patriots.
Somebody like that. That's what it is.
That's pretty good. Matthew, last question. Can you give me the last digit of Jay-Z's cell phone number? Just the last digit.
2.
Wow.
The last number of his cell is 2.
ESPN Daily, exclusive. Jay-Z's last digit of his cell phone number is 2. Matthew Berry, thank you for being my number one choice among all fantasy analysts everywhere.
Thank you, my friend.
And don't die before the end of this marathon, also.
I'm going to try not to.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.